Welcome back to another edition of Stars Radio, your short track auto racing source. Production of Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. Well, folks, we were off last week. Our boss had something else he was doing last week, and I understand he worked pretty hard. And that really sucks because it was his birthday weekend, and he had to do all that hard work. But we're glad to have him back here in the studio with us, producing this show, getting us ready. We got three great shows for y'all tonight. We're going to kick it off here at 7 o'clock hour, Stars Radio. And then you got Speedway Report with Patrick Reynolds at 7:30. And you got Racing and Rocking at 8 o'clock. So three great hours, three great shows, hour and a half of radio. But I want to take the opportunity to introduce our guest tonight. I've had an opportunity to watch this gentleman race for quite a few years as we were competitors at the same racetrack. I want to welcome Mark Wirtz to Stars Radio. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, I appreciate you having us on tonight and giving us an opportunity to talk about some full track racing and fine sponsors.
Well, that's definitely what we're going to do, Mark. Before we get kicked off here and start talking about what's going on now in your racing world, kind of bring our listeners up to speed a little bit. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in racing and bring us up to the start of the 2017 season.
Man, how I got involved in racing. 1987, I'll skip through the fact of my father taking me out to Lane Speedway and Southside Speedway, all through the mid-70s, and just sat down, had the itch for stock cars, and going to the, Richmond Fairgrounds and watching the racing and everything. I was always in the back of my mind trying to figure out how I could ever do this sport, especially coming from a low-income family. So graduated high school in 1987 and got my job in the shipyard, and I built my first enduro car for Langley Speedway. They used to run 250 lap enduros, and it was a true endurance race. I mean, if your car broke, you just left it sitting on the racetrack, and you had to score. And after the completion of 250 laps, if you were leading or whatever, you won the race. And ran through the 87 season, and right at the end of the year, I somehow or another managed to win an enduro race, whether it was through creative scoring or what. We all had a way of figuring that out too. But took that money, it was $1,500, and took that money, and going into the 88 season, we built a bomber type car and started running, at Virginia Motor Speedway on the dirt, and some at Dixieland Speedway and Southampton Speedway when it was dirt. And just through rate of progression, would sell a car after we would run, whether it was a top five car or a top three car, we could win with it. We'd try to sell it and move our way up the ladder. And in the late 90s, I found myself getting into the stock cars that we're running now. And the rest has been solidified with late model stock cars throughout the 2000s and what it is now. And we've been very fortunate with sponsors, great car owner, and leading into the 2017 season, we're solid with Dunkin' Donuts, Dunkin' Virginia. They cover Outer Banks and all throughout Virginia, East Coast to the western tip, North Carolina, part of South Carolina, and then just picked up a great sponsor towards the end of the year last year with CorvetteParts.net. out of Ohio, and Tom and TJ and Jen and all of them have decided to generously help us out again this year. And I can't say enough about them, other than just trying to encourage people. If you got a Corvette any year, you got to touch base with them because they can definitely get you anything you need. We have Duragloss, Clark's Racing Engines, and Creech Chassis, and we're just really excited about the 2017 season with some new parts and pieces we got going on the car, and some help from J2 Performance, Jamie Jones, out of Charlotte. And I'm actually sitting here looking at the car now. Just got done welding new upper A-frame post on it, trying to incorporate some new ideas into this season coming up. Just really excited about kicking off the season. March 25th, probably hit twin 100s at South Boston Speedway. if we get done early enough, we might hit the early race at Kinley on March 5th, I believe, or 4th. And then hopefully we'll get some good news here shortly and possibly be able to race at our home track again.
Well, I know you're excited if Langley does get open back up and you're able to go there and race. You've run tons and tons of laps there at Langley. My first remembrance of you racing there at Langley when I got transferred to the Navy there, you were running Grand Stocks. I believe it was your first year in Grand Stocks when I went over there to the Hampton Roads area. And I remember some of them great battles that you had back in the Grand Stock days with Jamie and Paul and Kevin Lupton and some of them guys over there. And I can't remember all them guys, but y'all guys just put on a hell of a show with the Grand Stocks over there. And man, I seen some of the best racing. I mean, I love late model stock cars, but y'all and them Grand Stocks back in the late 90s and the early 2000s was just some of the best racing that you could see anywhere in the United States.
I'll tell you what, I think the Grand Stock division, those cars weren't very different than a late model. Just a couple of the main suspension pieces and parts in the motor were more stock type to keep the cost down. But the fields were 25 to 30 cars every Saturday night, and Langley being as tight as it was, everybody would get in line and race, and it was bumper tagged to try to get by the guy in front of you. And one night I got a little brave and I tested the waters on the outside, and I think that's when I started establishing my reputation for running the high side, and I could pass somebody rather swiftly on the outside groove where everybody else was just trying to beat and bang and knock the guys up out of the way. And I was always had to fix my own cars and didn't have a whole lot of money, and I didn't want to get into the beating and banging war because that just meant more money spent and more work in the shop instead of working on the setup. So we started figuring out a way to make that outside groove work, and next thing you know, we're winning races. So that was the Grand Stock division has definitely paved the way for my confidence and just some of the little bit of ability that I've been able to transfer into the late model stocks.
Well, Mark, I remember an epic battle that you and Jamie Good had coming down for a Grand Stock Championship on the very last race of the year. Do you remember the one I'm talking about?
I'll never forget it. that night, we lost the race. We ended up tied for the points, and Jamie won the championship, virtual wins. The way it all went down, as you remember, they had a couple block cars out there that got between him and I and kind of set the stage for what happened. And, after the race was over, we pulled over to the tech shed, and I got out of the car, and I just took my helmet off, and I hung it up, and everybody's looking at me like, why aren't you throwing a fit? And I'm like, well, what's that going to solve? The race is over. We can't back up, hit rewind. Like, whatever I do now is not going to fix the fact that I've got to learn from this and move forward. Well, unbeknownst to me, there was a chassis manufacturer standing off to the side watching this all go down. And this is where I learned a very valuable lesson in racing. Donnie Harris had put the thought in my head, and it just stuck where, when you're at the racetrack and families and children and potential sponsors are all around you, Donnie told me one day, he says, no matter what goes on in that race car, boy, when you get out of that car, if you're mad enough, you just go up in the trailer and you sit down to cool off, or you just get out and act like nothing's bothering you, because you'll never know when that million-dollar sponsor standing right there next to you waiting to talk to you, and you get out of the car and show your ass, and he turns around and walks away, and you never knew he was there. So I always establish that mentality, and I try to keep it every week now. And some weekends you slip and lose your cool, but I managed to keep that mentality that night. We get away from the racetrack, and it sets in that I just lost a title, a championship that we fought hard for. Well, Monday afternoon, Manuel Zavakis from Stock Car Products called me and asked me to come to Richmond and sit down and talk to him. And I'm like, well, I don't know him any money. I don't know what in the world Manuel Zavakis wants to talk to me about. Well, I got in his office, and he said he hadn't seen the way I handled that situation, and very many racers as of late, and this was back in 1999, and he said, we'd like to give you a chassis. And I was like, are you kidding me? And I'm sitting here racing on a very, very low budget, and I get a chassis builder give me a chassis for the upcoming season. We went on to win the championship the next year and finished second in the nation. And then the rest of the 2000s was a really good decade for us. And anyways, you know, just what I'm getting at is it, that night, even though we lost, we won, if that makes sense. I lost
absolutely.
That battle, but I won the war.
That's right. Well, Mark, I can't think I can ever remember seeing you just totally lose your cool at a racetrack. You know, that is one thing that you do have, that reputation of being that, you know, calm, collected guy. You know, you let your actions speak on the racetrack by collecting checker flags, and there's not a better way to show your action than collecting them checker flags out there. But I never will forget that night. I mean, it was some great racing, and like you said, there was a couple blocker cars in there that was kind of hindering your situation there. And I know there was a lot of people that was just fighting mad in the pitch, you know, that wanted to start something, you know. But I think a lot of people kind of took your lead there, Mark. You know, they saw, you know, the way you were handling the situation, and I think they come to the conclusion that, well, if Mark can handle this, why are we getting mad? You know, he's the driver. You know, he's the one that just lost this championship here. So, and you mentioned Donnie Harris. You know, Donnie Harris taught me a whole lot about race cars. You know, I spent some time up in his shop learning different things. He was a very, very smart gentleman, no doubt about it, when he come to the race car. And I remember having some talks just like he told you. You know, you never know when that sponsor's gonna be around, you know. I remember him telling me more than one time, you know, listen, you know, just because you ain't got the fastest car in practice don't mean you ain't going to have the fastest car when you drop the green flag, you know. He said, you know, you got to figure out what your car does in practice to know what it's going to really do come to race time. You know, you have guys that would be lightning fast in practice, but dropped the green flag and they went backwards. You know, they might have qualified up at the front, but they went backwards. And I never will forget Donnie teaching me that little bit right there. You know, so, you know, Donnie was one that hammered home, you know, sometimes you got to slow down to go faster, you know.
That's absolutely right.
So,
you know, back when I was still trying to understand race cars and learn more about them instead of just, well, this goes here and I'm going to do this because I saw somebody else doing it, he had me come up there and work evenings for him when they had Black Hawk Performance up there, and I was working on the jig, installing front and rear clips, and building some of the pure stock cars, and got to really start learning the ins and outs of race cars and exactly, you know, how they work, and when you make a change, what's the action and reaction and
right.
And stuff like that. It's the hands-on that I've been fortunate enough to have exposed to me over the years has really helped keep me in the game, I believe, and the help of just true good people that love racing, that wanted me to drive their cars. I was all but done at the end of the 2002 season with my own equipment. We had the good equipment and we had the ability to race, and I had the great team. I couldn't afford to do it out of my own pocket, and I was ready to shut up the doors and be done and sell everything. And the Colonel and David bought all the equipment that I was driving and asked me would I continue to keep driving for them. And that just was like a blessing that has kept me at 48 years old in, you know, still being competitive at the racetracks on Saturday night. And I feel very fortunate to have the help we've had along the way with corporate sponsors like Dunkin' Donuts and CorvetteParts.net, and in the years past, Planet Fitness, United Rentals, and Coors Light. It's just been overwhelming to me to go from that kid that was sitting there wondering how in the world a shipyard worker would ever be able to compete in a stock car that looks like what you're seeing on TV on Sunday. And I'm sitting here in the rocking chair in the shop now looking at hoods hanging on the wall and two motors sitting in the floor and cars sitting here with all the parts and pieces I need. And I'm and it's just amazing that I've been blessed to have all this opportunity to enjoy this sport. And I really respect the sport. I respect the people that run it, the racetracks that put on, you know, turn the lights on and put on the show, or put on the ability for us to have a race for the fans every Saturday night. It's just still kind of overwhelming to me to be almost a 30-year veteran in the sport and pinch myself and realize that, hey, I am the one climbing in the car. I'm not the one watching. It's I don't take that for granted, and I really hope that some of the younger kids come along will take that approach to it so that the sport will be good to them for a long time and not just a short time.
You couldn't have said it better there, Mark. And, you know, you have had opportunity to have some great sponsors. I definitely remember the course car. I remember when you broke the Dodge out at Langley. I mean, you know, so many people's eyes opened up when that Dodge broke out there at Langley, because, you know, we didn't have too many Dodges running out there. And, you know, you were dominant with the Dodge car. You did very, very well with it. And it's funny because, you know, a lot of drivers, Mark, they want a particular number and they stick with that particular number all the way through. And I can remember you changing numbers for whatever it took, you know, to keep a sponsor. If a sponsor says they wanted you to run triple X on your car, if they were paying you enough money, that's what you did, you know. I mean, you did the things you need to do to keep sponsors, and you've had some very, very good sponsors along the way.
Well, you know, I feel like that, you know, having an identity with a number is always good. People will always remember the numbers, you know. But, you know, the key at the end of the day is, you know, after you go to the racetrack on Saturday, if you haven't fulfilled your obligation to give some sort of return to these people that are advertising on your car, then it's all for nothing. And you can't just take somebody's money and say, well, I'm just going to do what I want to do. You have to conform. And, you know, a number doesn't define who you are. Your actions on the racetrack and how you race week in and week out define who you are. And when you develop that reputation or that definition of who you are, it doesn't matter what's on the car. People just hear the name and they can associate it with what they're about to see. So, I learned real quick that I needed to get over getting hooked on a number. It's either this number or I'm not racing. If I wanted to do the sport, I had to do what it took to stay in it.
Right. Well, Mark, what are some of the accomplishments that you've accomplished in your racing career, like track championships, national championships, stuff like that?
Well, right now, we have 4 track championships, 3 at Langley Speedway, 1 at Southampton Motor Speedway. I've finished 2nd in the points, I think, like 7 times. I've got 4 Sportsman of the Year awards. I got 5 Most Popular Driver awards. And in 2003 and 2004, the 2 seasons back-to-back, we won the NASCAR Southeastern Coastal Division, which was a little bit different than it is now. It wasn't broke down in the states, it was broke down in the regions. Right. And the region that we won was Florida to Maine, basically. And it was a big deal, I think, in 2003, for this particular region that I raced in. Denny Hamlin finished 2nd to me, and Timothy Peters finished 3rd. And of course, everybody knows who they are now. We ended up finishing 2nd in the nation that year to Mark McFarland, who's now working for Matt Miller and taking care of all the Travis Miller's cars. That I think Michael Self's going to drive one of their ARCA cars at Daytona this year. And then in 2004. Greg Persley from Irwindale won the nation, and we finished 3rd in the nation that year, but won the region again. And right now I'm sitting on 99 wins, trying to get that 100th win, and we came very close last year at South Boston, and we're hoping to somehow or another figure out a way to make that happen this year.
Well, I'm going to predict in the 2017 season you'll get that 100th win there, Mark, and especially if Langley is able to open back up here in 2017. Have you heard any rumblings about the possibilities? What's your take on that?
Well, my take is, false news is more damaging than bad news. And I think that if I had to go off of Mark Ortz's gut, I would say there's a good chance. But, the truth of the matter is only the people that know are NASCAR and the people involved with trying to make it happen. I feel like something's going to happen, but me personally, I don't know for facts, so I don't feel like it's up to me to say, well, Langley Speedway is going to open. I feel like I can say I feel like it's going to open.
Right.
So, right now we're planning for opening day at South Boston on March 25th, and, or the Kenley race on March 4th or 5th, whatever that Saturday is. As far as Langley goes, if that opens and there's an announcement made anytime soon, I can only count that as nothing but a bonus and a blessing.
Right. Well, Mark, you've already mentioned a lot of your sponsors, but I want to give you an opportunity to recognize some of your crew members. I know you've had a solid crew over the years that stuck with you. Won't you take a moment and recognize some of those folks and give them that recognition that they deserve?
Sure. Well, Colonel Robinson, Raymond Robinson, and his son David, and their late wife and mother Phyllis are my car owners, and they've really done an awesome job in just keeping me around and allowing me to work out of their shop and race with their equipment. Bill Diggs, Clayton Parrish, and JB Wells have been with me this 17 years now, and the guys are like automatic. They just show up, and it's like a team. It's a true team. Everybody knows what they have to do, and everybody's comfortable with what they're doing. And they just really help get it done and keep things cohesive. And last year, we were raced out of town a lot because Langley was taking a year off. And Jimmy Gauldin, Skipper Madonia, and Tyler Smith went on the road and helped us every weekend and took time off of work and just did an awesome job keeping us a solid team that worked their way around the car very well. And it's just been great people. I could go on and on. Tamco Paints, Sammy Barney and Bob Barney and Dura Gloss out of North Carolina, and just the people that step up, even if it's $150 here and there, everybody that helps is part of the team. And the driver can do all he can do behind the wheel, but what I do in the car is a final product of what was done at the shop or in the pits to get me in the car. And that's where the team has to all gel and work together. And I feel blessed and would dare say I got one of the best teams in late mile stock car racing.
Absolutely, that, Mark. Like I say, I followed your career for quite a few years. I want to wish you the best of luck here in 2017, and it was awesome having you on the show. And if you got another sponsor you want to promote or you want to come back on and talk about something, give me a buzz, and we'll have you on here, and we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. We just love talking short track racing.
Well, I appreciate you having us on, and when them cars light up in the Monster Energy Cup, and you see that 32 Go Fast team going around with CorvetteParts.net, just remember it'll be at a local short track.
Absolutely. And Mark, we'll have a podcast put up probably by at least noontime tomorrow, and I'll put the link up for the podcast, so if anybody missed the show live tonight, they can go back and listen to it on demand. All right, folks, it's time for us to get out of here for the evening. We want to recognize our military unit of the week. Our military unit of the week this week is the 908th Air Wing Unit out of Maxwell Air Force Base in Colorado. You guys are our military unit of the week. We'll see everybody back here next week for another edition of Stars Radio, your short track Auto Racing Source, a production of Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. And Patrick Reynolds and Motor Week Live, our Speedway Report is coming up at 7:30, so don't go nowhere, folks.